Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff. Quick programming note. Normally, it's Wendy and myself. Today, Wendy is here, but she's not here. She'll be here later on. She's tardy, okay. As the kids like to say, Steve. She's tardy.
Wetting the whistles?
She's wetting the whistles.
Creating a demand?
Yep. That's exactly what she's
doing. Can't wait for Wendy to get here.
If you're here at the beginning of the show, people go, oh, it's another day.
Right.
But if you build that sort of a demand, if you say, well, I'll be here eventually.
Are you telling me that if I just wait a little bit,
yeah,
Wendy will be here?
Yeah. That's how it works. Yeah. So later on in the show, could be in 5 minutes, could be in 45 minutes, an appearance from Wendy Snyder, my co-host and my friend. She'll be on later
on.
Okay. Maybe she's doing her physical therapy.
Could be.
Yeah.
Maybe she's taking one of those cognitive tests that people in high places are forced to take now.
Oh.
Maybe she's doing that.
30 for 30, that's not too shabby.
You can't do better than that.
No.
30 out of 30 is 100% in my book.
It's like an ESPN movie.
Did you see with the breakdown of what goes on for this test, by the way?
No.
All right. I will read you the breakdown. Some of it is identifying animals. They show you a picture of an animal, and then you have to identify the animal.
It's not a gorilla, is it?
I can't say.
Okay.
I'm not allowed to say.
Okay.
Here's the test that Donald Trump took yesterday, and as Steve pointed out, got 30 out of 30, the best you can do.
He took Friday.
Friday. The results came out yesterday. Correct. Sorry.
Okay.
Identifying animals and reciting a list of words are among the types of challenges contained in the cognitive fitness test taken by our president, Donald Trump. This, according to White House Dr. Ronnie Jackson, Trump scored exceedingly well, 30 out of 30. On the Montreal Cognitive Assessment, and has absolutely no cognitive issues whatsoever, according to his doctor.
It's the MoCA test.
The MoCA test.
Known as the MoCA test.
Yep.
Okay, look,
yep.
So, but it is, it's an accepted test, and...
Yes, it is.
It looks for that, and he's got 30 out of 30, so... You know, I was just saying in here, I can't not believe everybody. I choose to believe people.
Right.
So if this doctor who's taken an oath stands up and says that he showed
fit?
No signs and that he's fit, then I believe that.
Have you ever taken, because I took a version of this about a year ago. I was getting migraines for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
So
I have some ideas.
About why I was having the migraines,
yeah,
or how to get rid of them.
Was it the news at all?
That wasn't the news. Yeah, I got him late in November of last year. Constant pain. I don't know why. So they gave me a version of this test, and it was laughably simple. Because I said a couple of questions in, I said, at some point, these are going to get harder, right? And the lady giving me the test went, nope.
Well,
not going to get any harder.
Because the test isn't designed to find out how smart you are, right? It's
right.
Designed to find out...
If your brain's hooked up right.
If your brain's hooked up right.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Gazelle. I see a gazelle.
They have to show you the picture first. You can't just suggest an animal. They have to show you the picture.
But if you were right, you'd get a 31 out of 30.
Although I'm surprised Donald Trump didn't just keep going, lion, lion, lion. I think he saw, this is his doctor speaking now, I think he saw doing the physical as an opportunity to put some of this to rest, because there have been accusations, you know how the media is, Steve, they're always accusing the president of not thinking clearly, so there have been accusations that he's not quite right. Well, 30 out of 30, the test created in 2005 works a certain way. It says, according to the website, mocatest.org, it is a rapid screening instrument for mild cognitive dysfunction. So does somebody suggest, because this test is for mild cognitive dysfunction, does somebody say, all right, he hit 30 out of 30, let's juice it up a little bit?
I don't know. I mean, I'm always very leery of diagnosing someone without being in the room, right?
Right.
And so all of these stories...
That's fair.
I mean, they might be anecdotes or whatever, but it's hard to put a lot of stock in that. And I think the doctor was asked about that, and he called it tabloid psychology or something like that. You know, the people,
right, right,
who are doctors going on TV and diagnosing the president without ever talking to him.
But at this point, if he's the president, he needs to do more important thinking than just being able to say that one's a bear and that one's a duck.
Yeah, we need more. We need more than mild.
Right.
We need major.
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 I like the idea of that.
You know, we should be testing for major dysfunction.
Yes.
I mean, he's the president. It should be big.
And they should probably test them every couple of days. Right? This shouldn't be a random every once in a while thing.
Well,
how about every couple of days?
The doctor said he spends a lot of time with him and he hasn't seen any reason to test further.
More often?
Right. or to give more comprehensive testing.
Do you remember, because I heard people yesterday say that this is similar to what happened when Ronald Reagan was obviously having some trouble toward the end of his presidency, and they were administering similar tests to him to see if his cognitive skills were on par with what they'd need to be. Although he deteriorated very, very quickly after he was president, and some have said over the years, there was probably quite a bit of that going on while he was president. They just didn't want us to know this. Do you subscribe to that?
Well, I know that people have said that. Yeah, same thing. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a doctor.
A friend
Look,
of mine.
Bill, I lost my coat at the health club yesterday.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
In a locker that was within 2 feet. I mean, I'm not kidding you. Within 3 feet.
Every one of us has something like that.
Well, that's why, don't you think this test should be something like, where are your keys right now?
Yes.
Or like, where is your phone?
Yes.
What did you have for dinner last night?
I like all those.
It should be questions that you're going to be like, oh.
Where you're forced to think a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're not looking at a picture of a lion. Oh, it's a lion. You know.
A friend of mine, after, all right, so Ronald Reagan's presidency ended, and then they brought him out to Las Vegas to speak to this group. And a friend of mine who was doing stand-up comedy was his opening act. So Jeff went on and did 15 or 20 minutes, and then they introduced the president. And backstage, he got to meet President Ronald Reagan, and he said to me, and it hadn't been disclosed yet that Mr. Reagan was suffering from dementia. And my friend Jeff said, I'm talking to him, and I'm thinking to myself, a month ago, it was actually 5 weeks, but Jeff said a month ago, he was the president of the United States. And he said, it was so hard to believe just having that conversation with him because he just was as out of it as out of it could be. And he was the president 5 weeks prior.
Right.
It's frightening. All right, let's do this really quick. We must take a quick break. We'll come back. There's a lot more show. If you'd like to jump in, love to hear from you. 312-981-7200 is our number. You can text us there. You can call us there. It's Bill Left. Wendy Snyder will be in later. Yes, Steve?
Can I just say, I just reprinted the weather forecast because I couldn't find it. And again, it's 8 inches from me. It's on my desk.
Every one of us has these. It's not just you. Believe
me. I killed a tree because I didn't look down.
I know. Don't feel bad. We all go through this. All right, more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy soon on WGN. It's Bill F. along with Steve and Mary. Wendy will be back later on today. She's just a little late, but she'll be in today. Don't worry. The results of President Trump's cognitive fitness test were revealed yesterday. He couldn't have done better. 30 out of 30. Jack would like to add to this, however. Hello, Jack. How are you?
I'm good.
What do you know about this?
Well, that test like that, I'm not. I will preempt this, but prelude this with I'm not a doctor. Doctor in my family, and I also was a teacher for 36 years and worked with LD people to some degree. Those tests measure that's memory and calculation ability, whatever. That's not interactive things with other people. So somebody who's a little off socially, autistic, a sociopath, a psychopath, could pass them with flying colors. That doesn't mean anything. But their interaction and what Trump has been having troubles with is his interactions with other people.
Yeah.
So what?
But there are tests specifically designed to tackle that, though. So why wasn't he given one of those tests?
That would be a good question. Because it's his physical, and he's arranging it, and that's what they did. That's a test, okay? A psychological test will be much further around the bend, and he's not going to go looking for trouble.
No, of course not.
But, yeah, of course. My brother has a favorite saying: "Is the dragons hoard all their gold?" So,
yeah.
That's where things go with that, I think.
Well, Jack, thank you. I appreciate it. Have a good rest of the week.
Okay, I hope people get something out of that.
I hope so. Thanks. I'll give you a couple more examples from the test. But first, Steve, I was thinking about this yesterday as the results were divulged. What if he had only... he did 30 out of 30, and that's fantastic. But what if he only got 15 out of 30 or 20 out of 30? It would be cause for concern. Would anybody do anything about it? If he just gets half of these right, and they're pretty simple... feeling it's half of them right, then we have a problem. I wonder what goes on under those circumstances. Candidates, people who take this test, the cognitive fitness test, have to copy a cube They have to link up numbers to the appropriate letter in the alphabet. For instance, A equals 1, B equals 2, and then fill in the sequence after that, C equals 3. They have to draw a clock showing the time. In this particular instance, there's an online version of it, so you have to draw up a clock, and the time has to be 11:10. So you have to draw the two hands on the clock to make them correct. Three animals to identify. I mentioned that one already. In the online example, they show you a lion, a rhinoceros, and a camel. There are also five simple words that are read out loud. The candidate has to recite them immediately and then again after 5 minutes. That's interesting. The test is repeated with numbers and a series of three numbers. Those need to be recited backwards. So again, he got 30 out of 30. There's nothing extraordinary about this test. I'm just very, very curious as to what would have happened should he have only gotten half or two-thirds of them right. They say normal on this test. There's, like I said, there's 30 different questions, 30 possible answers. Normal, they say, is 26 and above. He got 30. So good news all the way through. John Duffy is in a little bit early. John, first of all, thank you very much for being here. Good to see you. How are you?
I'm great, Bill. Good to be here.
Thanks for being here and being here early. You saw the bat signal up in the sky, obviously.
I did.
You know a little bit about this test, right?
I do. I've administered this test in the past.
Yeah. All right. Question number one. We don't have a whole lot of time here, but question number one is something that we've bandied about just a little bit. What is the main purpose of this test? Is it just regular, everyday, normal skills, nothing out of the ordinary?
Really basic cognitive and intellectual skills, really basic reasoning, sequencing issues, the ability to identify objects, simple cognitive skills, the ability to tell time
right
properly and to demonstrate that in an observable way.
Yeah.
So really, this is about identifying cognitive impairment.
Yeah.
Not cognitive skill.
Right.
Because most of us are going to do really well on this thing.
This probably wasn't the test he should have taken to prove that he's fit for office, is it?
I don't think it's a test to show fitness for office. It's really, I think, a reaction to this idea that he is demented somehow, right? Yeah. That he carries some degree of Alzheimer's or dementia. We've been talking about this for weeks, and this is a pretty good rebuttal to that, but it isn't an intelligence test right of any kind. It's not a cognitive reasoning test of any kind. So if we wanted to see if he were fit to be president,
yeah,
it's a different test.
But it would have been a serious cause for concern if he wouldn't. He got 30 out of 30. That's fantastic.
It really is.
If
yeah
he got half of these, if he got two-thirds of these, then you worry.
Absolutely alarming.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
So 30 out of 30, we can rest slightly easier.
Slightly easy that he isn't severely cognitively impaired.
Right.
That he can reason fairly well.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good news.
Yeah.
We're looking for some good news.
Right.
That's some good news.
But on balance, I've worked with children who've gotten 30 out of 30 on this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in those cases, sometimes, as we alluded to earlier, it doesn't necessarily telegraph that there's some problems. It shows that the brain is synced up the way it should be. However, there could be other farther, deeper problems.
Absolutely.
They're not in any way tested by this test.
This just scratches the surface that
imagine
we don't have a severe problem in terms of memory and cognition.
Good.
That's all it does.
Good.
Yep.
All right. We'll talk to you more later about other things.
Excellent.
Dr. John Duffy will be one of our guests today. Stick around. There's a lot more coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy soon on WGN. Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill. Wendy will be by in about a half hour or so, right around the time Dr. John Duffy joins us for his semi-regular segment. Wendy should be joining us as well.
Well, I'm looking forward to
it. We're
that
all looking forward
yeah
to it. It'll be fun. All right, so since I told you about a test that President Trump passed easily, out of fairness, I'm also going to tell you about a test I took last night and did miserably on. Steve, I'd love to hear your take on this test.
Okay.
And Mary,
yeah,
yours as well. This is from MSN. This started over at MSN, where a man named Adam Bible, who has what I believe to be the most biblical name I've ever heard in my entire life, Adam Bible, put together the things that if you are a man over the age of 40, which I am, and you are, Steve, and Mary, your husband, is, you should not have these things in your home.
Uh-oh.
I did not do well on this. I know that both of you will have scored way, way higher than me. I did not do well on this.
Oh, I know your number one thing you have in your home.
Well, it's the number one thing that they listed, and that's figurines in boxes. I collect toys and action figures.
It said that, really?
Yeah, that was the number one thing.
I was going to say, I just said toys, but yep.
It said you shouldn't have any toys in your house unless you have kids. I do have kids. or they're the ones that you played with as a child. Some of the toys I have are the ones I had as a child. If you still have them in the box, then you came in, then they came in and up the shelf. They're on display. You probably live alone, it says here. I do not live alone.
Wow, this test was written for you, Bill.
Yeah.
That's really weird.
Oh, it gets even crazier.
Okay.
It gets even crazier. But, Steve, you don't have any figurines of any kind in boxes.
No.
And Mary, your husband, doesn't either.
Not that I know of.
No. Right. That's good. I'm leading one to nothing.
Okay.
These are things that if you're a man over the age of 40, you should not have in your home. How about this? Posters without frames.
Like up a Farrah Fawcett poster or something?
Farrah Fawcett poster?
What if it's in the garage?
Oh, it doesn't specialize on where exactly located. It just says if you have any. Now, they signify like rock and roll posters, like a Jim Morrison poster. Yeah. I used to, as a kid, I had a lot of movie posters up in my room.
I still have my David Bowie poster.
You still
from
have
the
that
80s,
up?
But I don't have it up. I have it rolled
you
in the
basement.
You still
have it somewhere.
No, it's rolled. It's put away.
Not on display.
Yeah, I don't think my husband has any posters. I'm thinking about it.
I think the key here, though, is in frames.
Or not up on the wall, you mean?
Oh, maybe up on the wall. But if you've framed it, that shows that you're trying your best to make it look presentable.
Art.
And a grown-up. It's
yeah,
more
like a
art.
Movie poster.
Yeah.
I had the first Chicago Blues Fest poster framed for.
Oh, you did?
A long time, yeah.
See, now, don't you think the framing of it...
That's art.
...legitimized it?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
If it's not framed, then you look like you're 9, but if you throw it in a frame, people go, oh, he obviously cares very much about this.
Yeah, and it costs a lot more.
Yeah, yeah. What about this? A condiment drawer.
What, like packets?
Yeah. We have in our kitchen, there's a pantry, and if you open it up, there's not a single condiment known to man that you can't find in that drawer.
That's because you don't have to put food in your pantry.
Right, that's true. That's right. True.
But if the rest of us throw that stuff away for space because we have oatmeal and stuff.
Yeah, I'm afraid mice would get in there.
They'd have to be very crafty, Mary. They'd have to know how to open the packets up.
I guess, but no.
And
but if
hard.
You need barbecue sauce, if you need soy sauce, if you need honey sauce.
Yeah, we open up the refrigerator and we have those.
You got
the
it
bottle.
In there. You got it in there?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I do have a condiment drawer.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, you're like 0 for 3. Or
I'm not doing well. And it gets worse, Mary. I'm not sugarcoating it. Which is also one of the condiments we have, is sugar coating. Frozen dinners or frozen snacks. I got a bunch of those.
Oh, yeah. Everybody has those.
I think everybody should have those.
Yeah, we have those.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because in an emergency with with sub-zero weather, there are nights you don't feel like going out, and you go, oh, I've got some Swanson's.
Kind of a chicken pot pie.
Yeah. I like, all right. I'm 0 for 4, by the way.
A taquito?
You need a quick taquito.
Absolutely.
Yeah, frozen is the way to go.
Have a tequila instead. Thank you.
Tequila, taquito.
Instant coffee.
Oh, my husband has a ton of that.
No, I'm not a coffee drinker, so this is the first one I don't score a point on.
No instant coffee.
Steve, no instant coffee, just the real stuff.
I just threw some instant espresso out because I had bought it for years ago for chili. There was an espresso chili.
Yeah. And you just did this recently? You just got rid of it?
I did, yeah.
If you're just joining us, these are items that if you're a man and you're over the age of 40, you should not have these in your home. This is according to a man named Adam Bible. I like his name. Very, very deeply religious name. Sugary treats. Come on, everyone has these.
Like a cookie?
Yeah, well, yeah. Cookies, candy, cake.
This is dumb.
Everybody has that. You can't signify just over or under 40
that.
That
has nothing to do with, right,
I don't think it
man
does.
Of his age.
No. That's just something you want to have, just in case. This one goes along the same line. Soft drinks. Everybody has those.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take...
Well, you put them in drinks, mixed drinks,
yeah.
Too.
We don't have those currently.
None? Not a single one in the house?
A soft drink as in like a soda or diet soda?
Cans of 7-Up or Coke
Diet
or anything?
Coke?
Nothing?
No.
What's wrong with you?
How do you do that, Steve? What if somebody comes over and they're parched?
Well, first of all, no one ever comes over.
You don't have you never have company?
We would, but they just don't come over.
Your kids don't have friends?
No, they're not at home anymore.
Oh. So.
Okay, but they want beer now anyway.
Right, right. Are you a man over the age of 40 displaying sport trophies?
Hmm.
Like your own?
This one's fair. I would have to say so far out of the 9 that they've presented, this one makes the most sense to me. Because if you're a guy in your 40s and you're still showing off Little League trophies, maybe you peaked, right?
Unless you're the MVP. I was the MVP in 1973. No.
This is your way of saying you have the sports
trophy. Or if it was a Heisman.
I have none.
Right. If it's a Heisman, by all means.
Yes.
Put it in the nicest case of all time.
See, that was badly written. It should have said, with the exception of the Heisman.
Yes,
right.
For sure.
Right. What about, now this one I don't understand. Fake foliage. Oh, just having
like fake
plants. Right. But again, I don't think that doesn't fall under the bracket of a guy under or over 40, because I know plenty of people, men and women, who will display a fake plant somewhere in their house.
If you don't have a green thumb.
Right. It's just so much easier.
I kill plants all the time. I'd rather have fake ones.
Fake is easier.
Yeah.
It's much easier. Plastic shelving. Right?
Plastic shelving.
Yeah. So you have the option, if you're putting up shelves, of doing a legitimate job and putting up real shelves. Right? Or else you could buy the real cheap, tacky plastic ones going, oh, I'll put it up for a little while, and if it works, it works. You know what I mean? We have both in our house.
We do. We might have plastic shelves in the basement. I don't know.
Our plastic shelves are holding the trophies.
Oh, they are.
Is that a double whammy?
And the sugary treats? Come on in and see my collection of sugary treats. This
and
is from the ho-ho era.
The boxes.
Right. It's a full trip. All right, let's take a quick break and then more of these. How are you scoring? Are you doing well, or are you a man over 40 who's topped my score? So far out of the 10, I have 8 out of the 10. I'm not doing well. We're at 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's Bill and soon to be Wendy on WGN.
That noise is your headphones are too loud. It's feeding back into your microphone. I'm sorry. I screwed everything up by coming in midstream
Oh, come on.
Mid-spawning stream.
You did the exact right thing. If you're just joining us, here's what's going on. Oh, and you are just joining us, Wendy.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Thrilled to have you. You're a hard get. You're a very hard get.
Jazzy kept pushing and pushing.
Over at MSN, a man named Adam Bible put together these things that he says, if you're a man and you're over the age of 40, you should not have these in your home. So far, out of the 9 or 10, I've had all but one or two. Figurines in boxes, posters without frames, a condiment drawer, frozen dinners, sugary treats, soft drinks, those sorts of things. Staples in my house.
I have them too. I don't think it's just men.
That's the thing. I said on most of these, I don't think it divides between men 40 and over. I think it's everybody. Yeah. I don't know.
I was listening on the way, and it's pretty cool listening to our show when you're driving.
It's easier, isn't it?
Yes.
All right. What about this one? A futon.
We just recently got rid of one, but yes. We had a futon.
But should that be one of the things by which you're judged over the age of 40 or not? Because sometimes you have people come and visit. I guess
get rid of a
over 40, give them a bed of some sort.
Futon is, you know, you have a buddy coming for the weekend.
Right.
And
I bet you $100 that Adam Bible has never had an Eve.
I don't think he has.
Because
Steve, I don't think he has.
It just reads like a...
Right.
Single
Somebody
guy
who's by himself.
Setting up a single house.
I'm with you. Our
futon is from our leftover dorm room from one of our kids in the basement. They use it still.
Yeah.
You know, once in a while.
It's still functional if in a
It's not that comfortable. Can I just tell you?
It's never comfortable.
They make it sound like, oh, get a futon, you know, it doubles as a couch and a bed.
Right.
It's lumpy.
Right. What about this recliner that features built-in cup holders? Oh, that's the sign that you're a rich man. If you have one of those.
Are you supposed to get rid of these things, or this is what you're supposed to have?
They say if you're over 40, if you're a guy over 40, you should not have any of these things. It's an embarrassment.
With that one, I think it's something you shouldn't have yet.
Yet.
Oh, right. But now, come on, when they make like seating for theaters,
right.
That's the cup holders included.
Right.
It's not a recliner. It's usually a love seat with, you know, two of the little cutouts.
Yeah.
But
it's still part of the
home theater system.
Of course.
Which we don't have, so.
Of course. This one I agree, and I would even lower it from 40 to about 25 or 30. Sheets that are being used as curtains.
Who does that?
Every once in a while you'll see somebody who just...
Yeah, when you've just moved in.
We're going to get curtains. We don't have the curtains yet, so we'll just put up a sheet until we have the curtains. Doesn't look right, but I don't think I think, seriously, 25 is about the cutoff on something like that, don't you?
I think you get 1 week when you move into a house, maybe two.
To put up the real stuff.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, in our defense, because we had these kind of things that, they were shutters kind of, like blinds and shutters that you could make open from the top or the bottom, and they would get tangled all the time. And one time we just couldn't untangle them, so we took them down, and our plan was, we'll get another one and we'll put it up there. And that was about 3 months ago, and it hasn't happened yet.
But you just have a naked window.
Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah. You don't have a bed sheet hanging there. They now make these honeycomb shades that are not that expensive for people for that reason that just move in and they haven't gotten their window treatments yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they actually look pretty good.
Yeah. 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 What about this one? A mattress with no frame.
I don't think you should have that unless you live in a flop house. I don't even know what a flop house is, but you should have a bed frame.
We just applied to move into a flop house. Really? We'll find out a week from today.
So just a mattress on the floor.
Right.
That shouldn't really happen. We do that on occasion because, like, if we have, if Dylan has a friend sleepover, we grab the top mattress from Michael's bunk bed and put it.
Shift it over.
Yeah, but it's just there for a day and then it goes back up.
Yeah, everything's back to normal after that. Now, this one is not fair because I think everyone in the world is guilty of this, not just guys over 40, but some mismatched dishes. Because over the years, you accumulate, like, you have a full set and you lose one or two.
So
Or you break them. They break in the dishwasher sometimes. So you don't want to get rid of six or seven other ones. You go, well, so there'll be a time where we'll need these.
I have all white dishes that I got at Crate and Barrel when I got married 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And several of them have broken since Jim started loading the dishwasher. I should say.
But you've had nights, right, where let's say you have company over, so half the guests or two-thirds will get that, and then there's a couple of guys will get, like, Yogi Bear ones.
No, because I bought white ones. It's not the same pattern, but Target actually had some white dishes that were super close, so you couldn't even really tell. But I got the same color just to make sure. Yogi Bear? You have Yogi Bear plates?
When nice company comes over.
The jelly jars?
Yeah, we take those out.
Plastic or china?
China. Really nice.
Oh, my God. China, where'd Yogi you get Bear. Those?
A family heirloom.
Wow.
What about this? This is not fair to me or your husband.
Oh,
but
toys.
Do you display? Well, no, we already did that one with action figures, but what about a display of sports paraphernalia?
One wall in our kitchen is all White Sox stuff, and then we've got Blackhawks stuff all over in the family room.
This is a sports
bobbleheads
city.
Crazy.
We breathe sports in this city.
Yeah.
You're gonna have Walter
stuff.
Payton football.
Actually, I take that back. We have an autographed poster of the Super Bowl Shuffle people.
The whole team.
Yeah, most of them are autographed.
Yeah.
Geez, I have a Cubs bathroom.
A whole bathroom, Mary?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
It's pretty
cool.
That's
impressive.
A lot of stuff in there.
Considering their season has gone down the toilet so many years. How impressive.
In case you have to drop a Schwarber.
Wow. Wow.
That's the only name that worked, I got to be honest
perfectly.
With you.
This one I think is directed directly at you.
Uh-oh.
Do you have on display in your home or apartment any DJ equipment? I think that one,
I have old antique radios.
So that counts.
Is that on the list?
Old time microphone.
Look,
DJ equipment.
Number 22, DJ equipment.
That's weird.
Now that's wrong because now vinyl's back in action. So I mean, we do have a turntable.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Two turntables and a microphone. It's an old microphone, but it still works.
Right. You should be allowed to
have
that.
It's like an antique microphone that is displayed in my front room.
And in your case, it's part of your career, and in Jimmy's case, so why not? Why not? This one hurts because I'm so guilty of this. A video game station, a place where not just the video game console, but several of your favorite games and controllers, they're all there and ready to use at any time.
Okay, now I have that because I have a 15-year-old who has set everything up. And you?
Because it's me. It's 100% me. Glassware that has logos on it.
Yeah. In fact, we're getting our kitchen redone right now, and I have found some glasses that I've stolen from many places, like Shark City, Chef Shangri-La, and I think I need to get rid of those. I don't need them.
You don't need them, but it's kind of fun to have those, isn't it?
I mean, it was more fun going to these places, one of them, underage, and sticking these giant Dr. Fong glasses in our purse. Mm-hmm. That was the fun part. Mm-hmm. I'm sure people from this area, my high school area, have them as well.
Yeah.
That's why the drink prices kept going up, because they kept losing their glasses.
Oh, yeah, because of you. Because of you. I'll do one more. Some socks that have holes in them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again,
if the hole's not that big,
right? You get away with it.
One more time.
Plus, if you throw one away, you go. Then I don't want to throw that one away. That was in perfect shape.
I feel bad for the survivor.
Exactly. They're missing their partner.
Right.
Right. You don't want to do that. No. You don't want to come between a pair of socks.
Right. Mm-hmm.
No way. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's a
lot more. I moved them into the assisted living drawer.
A lot more show coming your way next, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Dr. John Duffy makes a return visit to the show.
Yeah, weren't you already on? I heard you when I was listening in the car.
Trying to sneak in an extra segment there.
There's nothing wrong with that. You get paid the same, though. You realize that. It's not by the word. We can't do it by the word like we used to.
Nobody mentioned this.
No, they changed the rules. Dr. John Duffy is a clinical psychologist, certified life coach, parenting and relationship expert.
Careful.
I almost swore.
Ship hole.
I know. His book is called his best-selling book is called The Available Parent. Hi, John. Nice to see you again. You wanted to talk about teens from a slightly different standpoint as usual. Go ahead.
So one thing I've noticed in the last couple of months, and I've talked to a couple of colleagues about this, we're seeing the normal kind of teen anxiety that we've talked about here before, where you know they're very stressed from social stressors, family factors, academic factors, too much time on screen, stuff like this. What I've seen lately is this degree of hopelessness and disconnection that a lot of teens are reporting that they feel. And it's escalating to the point where some of them become super hopeless and have... If they're not overtly suicidal, they at the very least have some suicidal ideation. And that's kind of a quantum jump from where I was probably just 6 months ago. And so I've been thinking about, like, well, what's the antidote to this? Because this seems like a big deal. And suddenly, instead of just saying we have stressed out teens, we have stressed out teens that may get into the position where they're hurting themselves, you know? And that becomes more alarming. And I'm seeing that more and more and more in the last, let's say, 4 or 5 months or so.
I was telling you off the air, my son's a freshman, my youngest, and he just felt like very blah. And he said, you know, I'm kind of feeling depressed, not suicidal, but I'm feeling kind of down. And I said, well, you know, you just had a nice little break. You had Christmas, you had your birthday. And I likened it to what we had discussed before. It's like when you're planning a wedding, everything is involved around that wedding. And then the wedding's there and then you're on your honeymoon and then you get home and you're like, okay, now what?
I really think you've got something there. Like kids, they find something to look forward to, just like all of us do, right? And they hang on for that. And then when that passes, there's this precipitous drop. But I love the intervention, Wendy. I love what you did because you went to understand what he was going through. So a lot of us are inclined with our kids because we don't want our kids to be in pain of any kind, right? So we're inclined to try to talk them out of it. Oh, everything's great. You get to start a new semester. How fun. You get to see your friends again. But kids aren't necessarily feeling that. So you give him this moment where you relate to him and say, I understand, you know, like this is probably not the toughest, not the easiest time for you. This is difficult.
Do you watch This Is Us?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Bill, I know you do. I don't know if you saw last night, but there's a moment where Jack's friend Miguel was complaining about something, and Jack had these words of wisdom to turn him around and say, well, it's going to be okay. And young teenage Kevin says, you know what, Dad? Sometimes you got to let people feel like crap.
Oh.
And you do. I've noticed that, and I've learned that in your book, The Available Parent. And
right.
By talking to you, you have to validate their feelings and not try to pump them up right away, but go, oh, that sucks.
I hadn't thought of it during the This Is Us episode, but man, Wendy, that is perfect. That's exactly what's happening for a lot of families. That show has such real keen insight into how families work, and it makes us all weep, you know.
Oh, my God. But it's not perfect either. It lets you know that despite, you know, some dysfunction, you could still have a real loving family.
Absolutely. Right. And I think in the end, it has to come down to listening and recognizing, oh, yeah, sometimes things just suck, and I have to be able to abide by that. And I have to live as a parent with the fact that things are not great for my kid. I have to be able to, like, just kind of suck it up and allow them to have that moment and be present for them to talk to me about it.
Yeah.
Because if we don't, our kids feel misunderstood, isolated, and disconnected, and that's the last set of issues we want them to suffer in these times.
Because of the advances in social media and technology, being a teenager right now is probably the hardest it's ever been, right?
No doubt. No doubt. It's so difficult because if you are left out, so a lot of kids feel left out, and you can find something. The most popular kid, if they're looking at Snapchat or Instagram, can find something that they're missing out on. So yeah. this FOMO thing yeah. is actually a very real thing. It's all but diagnostic because they can always find something that they are not a part of. And even if they're at a party, so kids have said, like, I'm at a party, but I see that my good friends are somewhere else, and they told me they were staying in tonight.
Right.
So whereas a generation ago, we had no idea, right? Yeah. If somebody was blowing us off, yeah. we didn't know.
Right.
Kids know. They are keenly aware today.
That's true. Yeah. That sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really difficult. And you get a visual. Like somebody presented this to me last week. I listened to this girl, and she said, it's not just that I know. Because texting would have shown me that. I could have like followed some threads and figured that out. But now I can see it. Sometimes watch it if there's a video attached to it. You know, so I can see everybody having fun without me.
Right.
Yeah.
So where is this going? Is it going to get better? Is it going to get worse? Are kids just going to accept it? Or how will this play out eventually?
I think it gets better in the long run because kids recognize what they're doing to each other. And they talk about it
yeah.
more than they used to,
yeah.
you know? They're really, really empathic. But sometimes they're just unaware. But once they're made aware that these things happen,
yeah.
They tend to curb the behavior that makes somebody else, you know, feel pain or feel bullied. It's where I think high school assemblies used to be not particularly useful.
Right.
Now, the kids actually pay attention a lot of the times in some
yeah.
of those.
Is yes. it improved? Good.
Yeah, that's improved.
Very
yeah, and
good.
I think they've done a good job in some of the high schools around us out in the western suburbs, at the very least, of getting speakers who can really relate to what kids are going
yeah.
through so that they can really present something that resonates instead of finding some expert who's talking kind of in a wooden way about theory,
yeah.
you know, where I think kids tune out of that real fast.
Sure.
Yeah.
Can I read this question real quickly because
yeah.
it kind of corresponds with what we're saying. Question, are times harder for kids now or are the coping mechanisms not as developed as before?
That's a fair question. Kids...
I think they're better coping,
yeah.
you know?
In the end, I think you're right. Yeah, I think kids cope really, really well. I just think the stressors are so much higher. Yeah, I think kids actually work on coping mechanisms and things like that. There's an app called Headspace, which is a meditation app. And I work with kids who, on their own, without prompting, have downloaded this app because they know somehow intuitively, I need to somehow chill out
mm-hmm.
some of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll do this on their own, you know? And I don't think we would have done that if we had apps
so
available,
either.
Right?
Yeah. No, probably not. Dr. John Duffy's here. If you have any questions or comments for him, 312-981-7200 will get that done. We'll pick this up in just a minute. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Dr. John Duffy is with us, life coach, a clinical psychologist. His book is The Available Parent. You can find him. Where can we find you? Where's your website?
Oh, drjohnduffy.com. Very clever of us. I got a whole team for that.
John, this is beyond sad, but a story came out today that I've been following. It takes place near Canton, Ohio, where six different kids over the last 6 months have all committed suicide in a very, very small town in Ohio.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before, that there is some sort of copycat syndrome when it comes to something, even something as morose as this.
Right.
But what exactly is the mindset, and what does a town do when they've got a plague like this?
It's tricky to figure out what the mindset is. So in areas where this happens, people kind of marshal their forces and try to eradicate this idea of a copycat. So obituaries are written in a really kind of cagey way, not being specific about
yeah.
method, even that something was a suicide. But what we forget these days is word gets around. Kids talk to each other. I'm
right.
dealing with that in a situation right now where kids, that there's a couple of suicides that have happened not far from where I practice. And if a kid is feeling really down and he doesn't feel particularly connected, I won't say supported because most every kid, you know, I think any parent listening would say, well, my kid's supported. I'm here for them whenever
right.
they need me. But if they don't feel connected and they don't feel heard or understood, and something happens, somebody attempts or commits suicide, there's often this enormous show of support and goodwill for that person. There's yellow ribbons around the trees. There's all sorts of ceremony and ritual that happens around that. And I've heard kids say more than once, if that were me, I wonder if anyone would show up.
Yeah.
You know, and so some kids take that idea too far, you know.
Those sweet little souls, though, they're not around to see who shows up. Exactly. It's just really heartbreaking.
It is. And it's hard to get that into their minds that, you know, like you're not going to see. And tomorrow could be a very different day than today. So if you just hang in there, you know, and that's one of the things I try to do more than anything else when I work with kids, is instill that degree of hope that just says, let's hang on and see what happens, right. You know, like, you know, because it's more interesting that way.
Right.
And I think we can make this better, and we can almost always make it better.
What happens when something, boy, one of these is earth-shattering, but when mm-hmm. you have six in a half a year's time. So more times than not, is the schools will deploy grief counselors.
Yes.
And what do they do in these situations to let these kids know that we certainly miss and mourn the death of whoever died, but it's got to stop. You can't follow suit.
Right.
What do they do?
So it's tough. Being a grief counselor in situations like this, I've done that before. And your job is multifaceted, because the first thing you want to do is just get everybody together, as many people who need to be together in a room, and just tell their story. And quickly, within about 3 or 4 days on the long end, because otherwise kids kind of carry the trauma of the loss around with them, even if they're not suicidal or anything. But you also want to check in with each and every child that you sit down with. And these might be kids, are usually kids you're unfamiliar with. They don't know you. You don't know them. And yet you're trying to convince them, hey, if you feel desperate or hopeless in any way, there is no need to go this far. And you want to let them know what resources are available to them, right? Mm-hmm. So there are school social workers. There are outside therapists. There's your counselor at school. And there are your friends and your family. You know, use these resources. Talk to these people. And that's the press in grief counseling, is don't sit on your grief.
Right.
Like, you know, experience it. Let yourself go through that whole process. And it's not a nice linear process, even though the Kubler-Ross 5 steps suggests it might be.
Yeah.
It's usually really choppy. And you might go through, you know, 3 weeks where you feel perfectly fine. And then that's when you fall apart.
Right.
So grief counselors want to let kids know, hey, you know, however you experience this is the right way to experience it. But be vocal. Talk to people about what you're going through. You know,
that's even so important, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so important. Yeah. And sometimes, in this case in Canton, some of these kids didn't know each other. And so sometimes you can be pretty far removed from a situation, but if you're feeling hopeless, mm-hmm. you identify with it. So you don't want to exclude any kid who wants to talk.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, and a very good question here. What if the teen is extremely shy and deals with anxiety disorder, tends to internalize? They're not likely to discuss these issues. Any suggestions?
Yeah, it's so tricky. And so what you want to do, I use this word available a lot, because you cannot force a kid to talk. What you can let them know is, in a really deep, sincere way, if you need to talk to somebody, I am here. And if you see a change in your child's behavior, so this is kind of a shout out to parents, a warning to parents and teachers. If you see a dramatic shift in behavior, if your kid isolates even more, your anxious child, then you pull the parent card and you say, you know what, we're going to talk to somebody, you know, and we're going to give it, 3 sessions, and then we'll evaluate where we are. But it's important to get your child in front of a mental health professional at some point. And in that situation, when you're not sure what's going on in your child's mind, there is no downside and there should be no taboo affiliated with going and talking to a therapist.
Right.
Yeah.
My guess is, as a parent, you could probably expect some opposition if you say to your kid, we've explored other options, but I'm making a judgment call here. We're going to go see somebody. There's going to be a little opposition to that, right?
That's an interesting question, Bill. There is a difference along gender lines, by and large. Teenage girls, typically they're like, okay, you know, really? and they come in and they're open and they talk. There's this resistance among boys almost across the board. You know, I don't think I need this. This is a sign of weakness.
Yep.
Even now, that taboo.
They might be hearing that from their dads, though. There are, and I'm not pointing fingers at anyone specifically, but there are a group of fathers who are like, oh, suck it up. You don't need it.
Oh, absolutely. More often than not, I have to agree with you, Wendy, that is
unfortunately.
Something. Unfortunately, right? You know, and so probably a good message to dads right here, right now is, you know, that is not a useful message for your kids right now. You know, especially if your child is a little bit of a black box, like our texter is describing, you know, where you're not sure what's going on, There is no downside to saying, let's just go talk to somebody a couple of times. And don't make it the end of the world. Don't make it surgery. It's just sitting down and talking to somebody.
Sometimes we need extra help that we can't find on our own, and let's check it out. Yeah. Something as simple as that.
Exactly.
John, you talked about how this situation right now is different across, between guys and girls.
Yeah.
What about the initial thing, the thing we first started talking about a little while ago, which is a child trying to be accepted in today's society who doesn't really play along the lines of social media?
Right.
Is that separate by guys and girls too, or is that not?
Kids are affected by social media in different ways. Yeah. I find that the girls I've worked with are really affected by, like, I don't look as good as a lot of these. They make these comparisons to the people that they follow on Instagram. And sometimes it's like these celebrities who spend, all sorts of time photoshopping and doctoring these pictures to look perfect. And they're like, well, I don't look like that. And, and it's easy to say, well, yeah, nobody does.
They don't look like that.
But still, they make these comparisons, and it's really hard for them to let go of that, So there's this pull toward perfectionism that sometimes leads to anxiety and maybe an eating disorder or something like that.
Right.
This is happening among boys too, by the way. Boys are not immune to that. They're following somebody else, but there is this idea. Almost always with social media, kids seem to find this area in which they don't feel good enough. They don't compare well, and that's why as parents, we need to be a little more savvy about how social media works and the impact it has on our kids' sense of self-esteem.
Right.
And one final text before we let you go. Dr. Duffy, I feel this is not limited to teens. Adults have the same feeling of being left out of friend events. And it is important to bring that up, too.
It's a brilliant point. I mean, sometimes, like you were saying, kids learn a lot of this behavior and this thinking from their parents. Sometimes this initially comes from mom or dad, where it's like, I see that they are looking at their social media and they feel like they're missing out or they're not good enough. So absolutely, this is not limited to teens. It might be kind of amplified a bit with teens, but I've worked with lots of adults and we probably all know lots of adults and we probably felt it ourselves, a moment of like, ooh, I wasn't invited to that, or I don't look like that, or I haven't achieved that thing. And suddenly we're making these upward social comparisons that really don't do us a whole lot of good.
Yeah. Thankfully, the sun's out today because that helps a little, doesn't it?
Yeah, right? Yeah. That's awesome.
John, thank you.
Thanks,
greatly
guys.
Appreciated. Dr. John Duffy, again, the book is called Available Parent. Listen to him right here on WGN Plus. His podcast is great. His website is drjohnduffy.com. Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys.
A quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you. No pills gonna cure my ill. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor, we have two doctors on the show today. Which
a
is
a paradox, Wendy. That's what we have.
All right, we go from Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist, to astronomer Dr. Mark Hammergren. How are you, Dr. Mark? Oops,
thank
I have
you.
The wrong button on. All right, I was bummed out. I was telling you this off the air. I saw some friends that are actually my friends on Facebook last night post something that I just saw a meteor. I just saw something streak across the sky. And then I did some more research, and it really was a meteor, and I'm really bummed that I missed it. Did you get to see it?
I didn't see it last night at all. It came down about a little bit after 7 o'clock p.m. our time. And I was playing with my son in the living room at the time.
Well, that's a good excuse. I have no excuse. I don't even know what I was doing.
There's no warning on something like this, right? This just happens.
How did you know? Can't...
That's right. Well, the object was probably only a couple feet across, and that's too small for any of the asteroid surveys really to detect. There are some things in process right now that might be able to find these things on their last approach, but yeah, no one is actually looking for these little things.
A couple of feet across, that's it?
That's it, yeah, and that's just based on an estimate of the brightness of the meteor as it came in.
But when it hit the Earth, it caused a 2-point-something earthquake.
You know, that's interesting. It wasn't the actual impact of any solid object. It was the sonic boom of this object passing through the atmosphere, impacting the Earth and just kind of punching the Earth and creating that earthquake.
This qualifies as a meteor or a meteorite. I don't know the difference. What does it qualify as?
Yeah, the terminology is a little obscure there. It's a meteor when you see that flash of light in the sky. Meteorites are the chunks of rock that survive to hit the ground.
Are some chunks, right? We think no one has turned up any yet.
No one has found any, but we know for a fact that they exist because the falling rocks, the falling meteorites, were picked up by weather radar out of Detroit. And I was looking at those returns myself today. We've got solid hits going down to about 7,600 feet above ground.
So how big, if the thing was only 2 feet wide, was it round? Was it elongated? Do you know?
We have no information on that at this time. And it likely shattered into thousands of fragments.
And probably little tiny pieces, right?
Little tiny ones. A lot more small ones than big ones. And even the biggest ones are probably only going to be the size of a golf ball, maybe a little
bit
bigger. Yeah.
That's it. All right. So a couple things. Thing number one is, if something this small creates a sonic boom like this, which then creates an earthquake, what if this was 10 times the size or 20 times the size? Then we'd have a serious problem, wouldn't we?
We might have a serious problem. Yeah. An example of that happened just a few years ago over Russia, the city of Chelyabinsk, city of a million people in western Siberia, rather. And they had an object 50 feet across, 17 meters across, hit the atmosphere. It came in at a shallow angle, though, which was kind of lucky for them. And the biggest remaining fragment was only about maybe 3 or 4 feet across, and that fell in a lake. So no damage was caused by solid objects hitting the ground or buildings or anything.
Yeah.
Most of the fragments were pea size or smaller. But the sonic boom from that broke windows in more than 6,000 buildings in 8 cities in that area.
My God.
If you get one of these, does this mean you're more apt to get more of these, or is it just a freak thing?
It's just a freak thing. These things happen randomly,
especially
since, of course, we aren't tracking these small objects. So about 20 to 30 times a year, an object this size or a little bit bigger hits the Earth somewhere randomly around the globe.
Now, was this a green light that I'm hearing from people? They could be different colors. What does that mean, the colors?
Yeah, most of the time, bright fireballs, bright meteors like this do have a greenish color. Now, some people learning from their chemistry class in high school say, hey, that means it's made of copper because you put copper in the flame, it turns green. Yeah, it doesn't apply here. The temperatures are so much higher than flames. Temperatures can be about 10,000 degrees, and that excites even calcium and silicon and metals in the meteorite, just regular rock-forming minerals, and they'll glow green. They'll give off that greenish glow.
As it's traveling through space, is it sort of kind of on fire? It must be, right?
Not fire.
No.
Out in space, it's just a rock heating up in the sun, just
That's
like a rock here on Earth. When it hits the atmosphere, they're going so fast that the pressure that they generate coming in the atmosphere heats the air up to, you know, about 10,000 degrees, and that just heats up the outer surface of the meteorite.
Yeah. That's a lot of pressure. And I know. I've got 2 kids in college. I know about pressure.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Now, we have a professional in the studio who's probably more excited than I am, but I was pretty geeked out. Dr. Mark Hammergren, astronomer for the Adler Planetarium. Now, you mentioned it's about it was about 2 feet big. I don't know, wide or tall. I don't know. What if a giant meteorite was coming and... It would be detected, and would we shoot it away? What would we do?
Well, it all
besides
depends.
Cry.
Yeah. It all depends on how big the object is. Big ones are easier to spot than small ones.
But harder to shoot at or get rid of.
Harder to deflect.
Okay.
Now, that said, the big ones, we can detect orbits, many orbits ahead of when they're going to impact, and that would be years, if not decades, of warning time. Now, I have to say right now that we do not know of any asteroids that are on a collision course with Earth. And
despite the reports that we've gotten?
Right. Yeah, the conspiracy theorists and crackpots. Right. Yeah, they've been proven wrong every single time. But yeah, we don't know of any on a collision course. And NASA surveys have charted more than 95% of all of the hazardous asteroids bigger than about a kilometer across. So, and none of them are going to hit the Earth within 1,000 years or more. So there's no Armageddon on the way from asteroids.
Isn't it strange, being the amount of objects out there, that there aren't some that are on a collision course with Earth? You'd almost think that it's inevitable. Why wouldn't they be?
Well, it's a matter of time. We can only really chart the orbits out to about maybe 1,000 years in the future. The dynamics of the solar system are chaotic.
Yeah.
And so the slightest uncertainty grows into, well, either a hit or a miss in 1,000 years. Mm-hmm. But small ones hit us all the time.
And we don't even notice it?
Well, most of them you have to see from like a dark sky, and you might see 1 to 2 meteors an hour. And those will be really small things, smaller than about a millimeter across.
But this thing happens every year in August.
The Perseid showers?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah, the Perseid meteor shower, yeah.
All right, so...
I'm a bit of a geek, sorry.
we see this fairly easily every year in August, but that goes on all the time, right? I mean, it's visible to us that time of year, but that's going on constantly, isn't it?
Not really. The Perseid meteor shower is visible only for a few days in August, around the second week of August, because the Earth happens to be running through a stream of debris from a comet at that time. And this debris from this comet gets spread around the orbit of the comet, and the two orbits happen to intersect at a time corresponding to the second week in August.
Always the same every year.
Always the same every year. That's right. Yep.
It likes summer better than winter.
We all do.
I know.
It's very smart.
I guess my question is, obviously, if you're listening to us in Michigan right now, that's where some of the debris, the meteorite, landed, right? Those are pieces of a meteor.
That's right. Meteorites are the solid objects, yeah.
And how do you know, is it glowing? Is there goo on it? How would you know what it is other than there's just a rock laying there?
Yeah, meteorites look really mundane. If you find a freshly fallen meteorite, it's likely to have a black or brownish crust on it. Now, that's not like going to fall off like a baked potato or something like that. it's going to be kind of a matte, maybe glossy appearance to it. And the stones will be somewhat rounded, not as rounded as river rocks. And they won't have big bubbles or look like they're burnt coals. That's for sure. They do not. No,
can you tell immediately if you see a rock, do you know immediately, oh, that's from space or that's from Michigan?
You know, I've seen so many thousands of these things that I do have that kind of visual experience. Yeah.
Wow.
So was this exciting for all the astronomers at the Adler?
Or
was this just like, it's another one?
Oh, everybody was on email last night just after that happened, and we had media calling the Adler at 4 a.m. this morning.
I believe it.
So other than the eclipse, this is probably the second biggest event to happen in the skies over the last year or so, right?
I think this is the most concentrated, yeah.
I'm guessing you're a fan of the work of Neil deGrasse Tyson, I'm guessing. Not really?
Not so much myself, no.
Interesting. I'm very surprised. All right, let me ask you this. He was on Colbert about 2 weeks ago, and he showed an artist rendering, not an actual photograph, but an artist rendering of something that's floating around in space that they've determined is from light years and light years and light years away, and they can't figure out why it is in the place in space where it is. Do you know this story at all?
Yeah, absolutely. There was an asteroid that came from interstellar space.
Yeah.
It's the very first one coming from outside our solar system that was ever found. And it just made a single pass through our solar system.
Yeah.
We don't know exactly where it came from. Unfortunately, it's probably been traveling for millions, if not billions of years out there. And could have gone all the way around the galaxy before it got into us. Yeah.
So it's just floating out there like space garbage or something?
Floating around between the stars, yeah.
But there's all sorts of postulates as to why it is where it is. What you say makes perfect sense. It's just been floating around forever, but it's so far off course that people are baffled by it, right?
Well, we're baffled by a couple things about it. We've been expecting to see one of these interstellar visitors for a long time. And it was really nice to see the first one.
Mm-hmm.
More detailed observations, looking at how its brightness varied over time, that revealed that it kind of looks like its shape might be really elongated, mm-hmm. like a factor of 10 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
And that is more elongated than any of the asteroids we know of in our own solar system.
Why is it just an artist rendering? Why can't they photograph this thing? Is it still too far away to photograph?
Too far away and too small. Yeah, it wasn't visible as anything but a dot, even through the best telescopes.
Oh, okay.
All right, we have some callers that want to talk about what they witnessed last night. You can call us at 312-981-7200. I almost forgot the phone number there. We have Dr. Mark Hammergren, astronomer for the Adler Planetarium, in the studio with us. It's Bill. It's Wendy, 720 WGN. Space cowboy, bet you are ready for that. I'd like to be a space cowboy. I really do like things outer spatial. And with us right now, Dr. Mark Hammergren, astronomer for the Adler Planetarium. Dr. Mark, there's a listener who saw the meteor last night and wants to share her experience. Hi, Lee.
Hi, how are you?
All right, what'd you see?
Well, we were leaving. We had gone to the movies. We were just driving home, and my husband will actually describe it. I thought it was lightning. And then when he said that it was something moving, I was afraid that it might have been a plane crash because we live very close to a small airport. But this is what he saw.
Hi, this is Jeff, and we live in Portage, Michigan, southwest Michigan. We were seated at a stoplight facing due east, and it was a clear night. We could clearly see this. It lasted between 1 and 2 seconds, and it had a definite form to it. A head and a tail in an arcing fashion, and it came down straight at the Earth. The colors were predominantly in the head portion, and they were brilliant red, orange, greenish, blue, bright yellow. And it lasted very, very quickly, as I said, between 1 and 2 seconds.
Like a firework.
Yeah, we thought it was a firework of some sort. And then I said, look, I almost thought that was a shooting star. My question, and this would be for the audience and anyone else, we had heard, read something about a Chinese space station that had broken apart a few weeks back, and the notion was that no one would know where and when the parts would fall to Earth. So, again, that hit my mind as a question, having experienced that.
Great question.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, thank you for that report. That's fantastic.
I know, it sounded like an actuality. It sounded like your wife just hit a button and there you were.
Yeah, he's standing next to me, that's why.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's a great report. If anybody has reports like this, good sightings, I recommend you check out the American Meteor Society website. They collect reports of fireballs like this, and hundreds of people have reported this for hundreds of miles around Michigan. That helps them triangulate the trajectory of the fireball in the sky. Yeah, that's a wonderful sighting. Regarding the Chinese space station, yeah, the first space station, Chinese space station Tiangong, that is uncontrolled, and it is going to re-enter in the next couple months. So it hasn't come down yet, hasn't broken apart. It'll come down relatively intact into the atmosphere sometime around March, and it'll be the biggest re-entering piece of space junk since our own Skylab back in the 70s.
Is that going to cause some kind of earthquake with the sonic boom as it re-enters the atmosphere like this little 2-foot thing did?
You know, that's a really good question. It may very well. There'll be sonic booms from it when it gets low in the atmosphere, and it's big enough that pieces may survive to hit the ground.
This is so cool. Well, thank you. What did you say your name was?
Lee and Jeff.
Jeff. Great report in American Meteor Society. Google that and give your report because that was awesome.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Mark, Lee and Jeff's description of it had almost every color imaginable. So why were they seeing that many different colors all within about a 2-second span of time?
Yeah, that's right. The colors are generated by a few different mechanisms. So the greenish, bluish color in the head, a lot of that is coming from the vaporized, very hot metals and rock in the meteorite. Also, some of the color is coming from excited air. Air that much, you're going to generate some color in it, too.
Interesting.
The reddish and yellowish colors come from the cooling material that gets melted and blasted off the meteor as it goes off behind it. And that just kind of glows reddish by incandescence.
Well, you know, it's funny. I told you we were on vacation last week. We were in Mexico, and you could see so many stars, and a lot of them appear to have a reddish or orange tint to them, but it's because of the gases contained within those stars, right? That's what we're seeing.
Yeah. So stars do have colors. If you pay attention and go out into the night sky, even in the Chicago area, there are some bright stars. Look at the constellation of Orion, if
Orion
you can.
The Hunter with the three stars as his belt.
Yeah. Very prominent in the eastern sky after sunset. Yeah. And one of the stars in the upper left is Betelgeuse, and that's going to have a distinctly reddish tint to it.
How about that? You have to say its name three times in a row. Is that how it works?
That's right, and then you see it.
Yep.
All right, we're almost out of time. We have like 30 seconds, but Rita, I'd like to get you on so you can share with us your vision last night.
Hi. Yeah, I'm Rita, and I was driving north on 131st in LaGrange, and I was looking to turn right, and I happened to see over the field, the same exact thing that the previous caller saw, the reds and the oranges, and it was just a flash. And I thought, oh, my God, it was a plane that crashed. I kept looking, and I thought maybe a drone crashed. It was pretty cool. And so anyway...
Well, you just wanted to share it. Did you rub your eyes like, what did I just see?
I did. It was just amazing, and I had no idea until I saw the news last night, and then I said, I saw that thing, and it was sure enough the meteorite, and it wasn't my imagination, that's for darn sure.
Well, pretty cool. I'm glad you got to witness that.
Indeed.
I did.
Thanks, Rita. I missed it.
Well, it breaks down to you just have to be looking the right way at the right time. There's no way in the world to predict something like this.
That's right.
And they
happen so quickly, you can't even turn around to get a look at it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing the excitement. This is like my my secret passion. I want to be a scientist someday. Mm-hmm. I really love it. So Dr. Mark Hammergren, you can find him at the Adler Planetarium, adlerplanetarium.org. Go see it. When's the last time you went? You really should go. How about that?
That is fantastic. I love it.
Thanks so much, Mark. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Wendy and I are headed toward the stream for the bonus hour. We'd love to have you there, or stick around and listen to Steve. He'll tell you what's coming up next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's WGN.